So welcome to the Fatigue Super Conference and to this interview. I'm talking with Dr. Jay Davison. Hi, Jay. Great to have you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Just to give a bit of background on Jay. So Dr. Jay Davison focuses on functional natural medicine. He's a popular speaker and a two-time number one international best-selling author. Dr. Jay was the host of the Chronic Lyme Disease Summit, numbers 1, 2, and 3. He was also the host of the Parasite Summit and co-host of the Detox Project, which had over 50,000 participants. Dr. Jay Davison is admired for his ability to bridge the gap between the scientific health community and the layperson. His at-home program is his private community that walks you through his exact protocols that changed his wife's life from a near-death experience of Lyme disease. He is also the co-founder of Microbe Formulas. Jay, great to have you. I've been diving into both of your books today, which will, I'm sure, come to some of the key pieces as we go through it. One of the things that really struck me, though, was the power of what really drove your passion for this area, your wife's experience with Lyme. So maybe you could just say a little bit, just to kick off, about what happened in that story and why it was so pivotal in turning kind of your direction as a practitioner.
Absolutely, Alex. You know, there's so many things that happen in our life, and I feel as if we can take one of two paths. Either we can respond and kind of step up to the plate when things are thrown at us, or we can try to push them off and we take another path that we seem, you know, seems to be easier, but actually makes life harder later on. So I look at life as either we get to do the hard things now to make life easier later on, or we can kind of take the scapegoat and do the easy things now that actually then make life hard. So we have these roads that we get to pick. And when my wife crashed, she had Lyme disease when she was 7 years old, in a coma. And from that point forward, she grew up in Wisconsin in the U.S., a very hotbed of tick zone. But that was, you know, 30 plus years ago now when that first occurred. So way before most people knew of Lyme disease, and there wasn't really the internet then yet, and, you know, all this public information available. But she ran into a lot of different health issues. When my daughter was born almost 7 years ago on my wife's 30th birthday, they're firecracker 4th of July babies. So they share a birthday, which is funny. But when my daughter was born, pretty much the bottom fell out for my wife, and my wife just couldn't recover. And it got really stressful. I mean, her health just, she was pretty much near death. So everything else went on pause. We ran a very successful corrective chiropractic office, dealing, you know, with what we thought at the time, detox and nutrition and things that were deep, but obviously not enough to have her abundantly healthy. And she never liked to be the guinea pig. So it was kind of like we just did things to, for her to get by, and she never wanted to try something to crash. You know, she'd rather just, you know, I just want to get by. And when my daughter was born, that was, quote unquote, the straw that broke the camel's back. That's like, no, we need to do something. And that's where, I guess my personality came in really well. I'm either all in or all out. And I was all in, like OCD, researching this, figuring this out. Okay. Well, you know, what do we need to do to, get my wife's, well, really save her life, but then, you know, get her health back and get my wife back. So that kind of, that was a big shift in my path. And it's really easy for us to look back and say, oh my gosh, why did this happen to her? Why God? Why us? Why this? Why that? And I really believe, Alex, you can boil it down to two thought processes. Either we look at life as it's happening to us, like everything's happening to me, poor me, this victim mentality, or we look at life as it's really happening for us. And the moment that we shift and understand it's actually for us, that puts us in this champion seat, this champion mindset, and realize, oh no, what I thought at the time, and I feel extremely guilty even saying this now, but I thought my daughter was a curse, because I'm like, my wife is literally dying, and I'm not sure what we need to do. And now when I look back now, I'm like, no, she was that blessing. She was that angel that forced us to dig deep, to uncover all these things that just hadn't dealt with before for her. And so much comes down to mindset and understanding. And it's real easy when you're in this chronic illness to just be your to be your worst enemy. I mean, just to, yes. to pick at things and fight things and really understand, wait a minute, my brain and body are connected and I'm a one and this is actually for me and there's going to be benefits. Maybe I don't see them now, but there's going to actually be positives that come from this and I'm going to overcome.
Yes. And I remember reading in one of your books that your wife had kind of been just about getting by for many years. And there were times where I remember reading that she had to pull out of the Junior Olympics because she had a sinus infection. There were these various kind of moments where it got in the way, but it was kind of never bad enough that somehow it became the crisis that needed attention. And I think sometimes what happens is things just have to get bad enough that one reaches the point where they really do realize that I can't continue like this. And indeed, sometimes having a reason bigger than oneself becomes necessary. And perhaps the birth of your daughter for both of you was a kind of moment where we can't go on like this. We have to find a way for something to change. And you're talking about mindset, and in a moment we'll kind of move on to kind of more of the causes of fatigue. But just briefly to explore a bit more, you were saying about having these kind of moments of kind of realization that either life is against us or you realize that life is for you. Maybe say a bit more about some of the other pieces that you found have been useful as a practitioner and also in supporting of your wife that have been helpful in supporting some of those shifts in mindset.
Yeah, this is a lot newer concept to me in putting pieces together. So I'm still processing it, but I guess what I believe is so important with chronic illness, you know, my wife, when she was 7 years old, she got sick. They gave her some medications and she, that caused brain encephalitis, which is essentially brain swelling. Then she went into a coma for 6 weeks. And in that process, when somebody does that, they're essentially their mind, their unconsciousness, if you will, like it detaches from the physical body, you know, like you're kind of separating the spirit or the consciousness of the body from the actual physical body. And yes. When I look at all the different tools that are out there for emotional healing and health, from the, you know, EFT tapping to, you know, on and on the list goes, I feel as if one of the most important things in the emotional side is to come back in your body and stay there. When somebody's not feeling well, especially when they're chronically inflamed or in pain, you exit because you don't want to feel the pain. But the problem is when you detach from your physical body, now your body can't operate at 100% because you're not really in the body. And I know this might be a little, I might not be, you know, explaining this properly, no, but my wife,
you're saying it's very clear to me. Yeah.
Okay. So my wife, when she was giving birth to my daughter, it was 25 hours of natural labor. She was a big okay. baby, you know, and my wife's a pretty tiny gal, 110 pounds. And it was, my daughter was 8 pounds, 12 ounces. It was,
right. That's impressive.
Yeah. It was a natural labor, but it was long. And when I look back just, and this is very recent, you know, continuing to put the pieces together. But when I look back, I'm like, wait a minute. I bet you in that 25 hours of, I can't even imagine the feeling and pain that women go through with childbirth, but something that long and that agonizing, I bet you in that moment she detached because that was her way of dealing with the pain. But I feel like after that happened, she didn't come back. And when she didn't come back, they didn't allow her body to recover. You know, she hit rock bottom a couple of months after, had to stop breastfeeding. She got allergic to literally everything except for water and then traditional bone broth. And she did that for 17 days, basically forced into fasting. She'd have a piece of lettuce and her throat would close off. You know, her body was just so reactive. And so when I think about in the emotion mindset, I feel like the mind-body connection, because you hear that a lot, but it didn't really connect with me until the last couple months of how important that is. And I feel like, you know, when you're tapping and you're doing all these different things, like you're saying, hey, mind, come back in my body.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to say, oh my gosh, I'm feeling anxiety, like, and not want to be in your body because of that feeling. So you jet. But the thing is you have to acknowledge that emotion. You have to acknowledge, okay, maybe I don't have a lot of energy. Don't run from it, but acknowledge like, hey, maybe I'm not feeling so energized, or maybe I'm feeling very angry or depressed or anxious. Acknowledge that emotion. Now, don't run from it. But then say, you know what? Thank you, but I don't need that right now.
Yes.
So it's not like you're running from it, but you're acknowledging it, you're standing there, you're kind of facing it, if you will. And I believe that changes a lot with chronic illness.
It's fascinating that you say that, because we have a phrase in the psychology team at the Optimum Health Clinic, which is, for your body to heal, you have to be in it. So kind of pretty much exactly kind of what you've been saying. And it's exactly, we see it as you described, that when there's some kind of trauma, be it a major trauma or a kind of subtle developmental trauma of not getting emotional needs met in a way that's important, the way we survive is we have to detach from our emotions, because feeling the emotions is something that we don't know how to do, or is too overwhelming or too difficult. So there's a kind of perpetuation of the kind of stress response by the nervous system having to support that detach. And actually, by coming back in, that is part of what allows that system to switch off into a healing state. So it's really interesting that's something that you've identified and observed in your practice, in your work. Moving on a little bit more to the kind of a bit more of a global understanding of some of the things that can cause fatigue. And obviously this is an enormous topic with lots of different kind of facets and elements. But in your experience, what's interesting to me is you're coming at this from a number of different perspectives. You're coming from a point of view as an educator who's run a number of online summits interviewing dozens and dozens of experts. You're coming at it as a clinician who's got a lot of experience running a busy clinic and practice with other practitioners working with people, and you're coming at it as someone who has been the carer and supporter of someone that's been going through it. So I think that gives you a pretty unique set of insights. But what do you identify as some of the primary causes? So when you're making sense of a case, almost like, what are the things that you're looking for to explain why someone's experiencing fatigue?
Yeah, absolutely. Emotions and mindset, like we've been talking about, is a key piece. And we all have different emotional baggage that we bring along. Some people just like to carry more of it than others. So it's very easy to get caught in a certain cycle that you've been programmed in through childhood or through past, maybe, abusive relationships, or just, different types of things that have happened in your life. So our mindset and thought process and how we, organize emotionally is very important. I think that's one of the foundations. Same thing I would put in there for food, that the nutrition you put in your body is absolutely imperative. Now, do I believe that you can change somebody's chronic illness just with food? In today's day and age, I don't believe it's enough, that there's more pieces to it, but that's really kind of the foundation. And then if we step more, what I would say, into like the functional medicine world, really getting to the true source or sources of what's going on with people's health beyond just food and emotional trauma and mindset, and not to push those off, they're really important, but really to kind of steer a little bit more into this focus, is parasitic infections are really big and a massive epidemic. Other chronic infections, I like to kind of separate parasitic infections from other chronic infections. Other chronic infections, I would throw the viruses, bacteria, so Epstein-Barr virus in, the viral category, which is known to cause fatigue, especially. We've got bacteria like Lyme disease, Bartonella, these other type of critters that can really inflame the body and also, stress out the adrenals and wipe people's energy out. You've got fungus in that category. So we've got parasitic infections, chronic infections, mold in the environment, so work, home, school. And then I would put as the last one, toxicity. And specifically, heavy metals is a massive epidemic. I would also throw in there pesticides like glyphosate, which has been found in rainwater. And we share one atmosphere, so it's everywhere, unfortunately. And then I'd also put radiation. I mean, there's been a lot of the Fukushimas and things in the world that unfortunately is creating a lot of toxicity in this planet. And ultimately, I believe that those four things are some of the biggest causes of why people struggle with energy and just struggle with abundance of health and really their health to be optimized.
So let's break those down a little bit more in a minute. But perhaps just before we do that, I know you were saying before we started recording that you've updated a little bit. One of the things that I liked about your first book, Five Steps to Restoring Health Protocol, was the emphasis you placed on the importance of the first step being detecting, like diagnosing, getting clarity. A stat that jumped out actually to me that I thought was pretty staggering was that you're saying the average time that a patient has before they're interrupted by a medic used to be 25 seconds. It's now down to 12 seconds, which means you've pretty much got 12 seconds to explain what's happening before there's something that's kind of coming forward. So maybe say a little bit about the role that you see of taking time to get clarity and to detect and get a kind of a clear picture before jumping into potential ways of resolving things.
Yeah, it is quite staggering. You know, because typically in a conversation, what you'll find is the other person typically isn't listening to like that stat you just dropped, you know, that it was 25 seconds and now it's 12. And what typically the other person is doing in a dialogue like this, where we're quote unquote communicating, is I'm typically waiting for my turn to talk. So I'm not really listening to exactly what you say, but I'm waiting for my turn to speak. And there's a difference of actively engaging and listening, Alex, to like the words you're saying and processing that, rather than like, huh, I wonder what I'm going to do later today after I'm done with this client. Or I wonder, you know, is this just like this other client I just work with? To not have that mind wander. And with today's day and age, I mean, people are distracted. We are the scroller generation of the world, that we have a, you know, attention span less than a goldfish, they now advertise. So when we're looking at health, I believe that you yourself know more about your body than anybody else does. So it makes the most sense as a doctor for me to listen to, you know, for instance, Alex, like, tell me what's going on. What are the biggest things you're looking for help with? You know, give me a history. Like, when did this start? You know, tell me more. And typically, I don't see clients one-on-one anymore, but my team does, of doctors. And the biggest thing is like, we, you know, the first initial appointment, we actually block 2 hours off. But I mean, typically the first half hour is just listening, like, tell me, you know, just basically verbally vomit what's going on. And we're going to take notes and intake things so that then we can start asking more intelligent questions. So I feel as if definitely with the insurance world that it's, you know, for a doctor, they're only going to get so much reimbursement, no matter if they spend 5 minutes or 5 hours with a patient. So they're going to be pushed into spending less time with them, because the actual client is the insurance company. It's not the actual patient. You know, whoever pays for the visit is the client. And unfortunately, when the insurance pays for something like that, you know, the doctors kind of fall into suit. So I'm a big fan of finding people that you resonate with, finding people that actually listen to you, but also have had to experience, you know, in guiding.
Well, one of the most helpful questions that I find as a clinician is when you feel like you've got the whole picture and you feel like you've got everything, and you say, is there anything else that I need to know? And when I used to ask that question, it was almost out of politeness. And then what I started discovering was that maybe one in four, one in five times, there will be some crucial piece of information that will come at that point that actually had a significant impact on the perspective that I would then take on the rest of the case. But you might be an hour into dialogue with a client to even get to the point that you feel you've got enough clarity that you're just kind of going, is there anything else that I'm missing? So I think taking that time is it's, as you say, it's someone's got to be paying for that time. It's either the clinician out of their own time, or it's the client ideally that's in a position to be able to do that. So you were saying to me before we started recording that we were talking a little bit about the sequence of how you approach a case, in terms of, you mentioned these different kind of pieces like parasites and limes and mold. And you were saying to me that you see parasites as being a kind of crucial kind of piece fairly early on in that picture. So maybe say a little bit before we come to that piece in the sequence, just like what, I guess not what parasites are, but like why parasites can be important in fatigue. And then, yeah, why you see that as a key piece to address early in the process.
Yeah, so things continually grow, and, you know, understanding what's most effective. And so like that first book I wrote, Five Steps to Restoring Health Protocol, that's probably coming on 4 years old now, which doesn't seem like that long, but yet obviously the whole editing and publishing process, like the book was written, you know, way before it was actually like available to the public. If anybody's written a book, you know, the painstaking
process. I always like people telling me that their books are outdated quickly. It shows that people's work's evolving, right? So
yeah. And it's not to say like, don't get the book. I mean, you can get it, but no, yes, there's a lot of changes that have occurred, and it's good because now we have a better understanding of order and effectiveness to really speed this up. Because it's real easy to look at this world and say, Alex, you know what? There's more toxins than have ever been created in this world. There's more EMS and EMR, electromagnetic radiation. Everything's Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and cell phone, and they're going to 5G. And like, you can get in this scary place. Or you can also look at it from, well, if all that's advanced and that's actually stressing us out more, our tools actually have advanced though to allow us to be healthier to match that. And what side do we pick? And I really believe it's important to pick the side of like, hey, there's better tools out there today than 20 years ago. The availability and more forthcoming of like, where does your food actually come from and quality and ingredients? I mean, that's better today, I feel like, than 20 years ago, that people just didn't ask those questions. So, and it's needed. But when we look at the order side of it, its first step is detect, understand what's wrong. And if you can't rule things out, like I'm not sure if there's mold, I'm not sure if I have parasites that Dr. J is talking about, I would rather assume that it's part of your issues so that you don't miss it. But if you're like, no way, that can't be, and you push it off, I mean, that could be a critical step that might hold you completely back. And so when we're looking at order, the first thing is detect, understand what's going on. And if you can't rule things out, assume all of it's an issue. And then the next step is opening up the drainage pathways. So drainage is really the normal body fluid pathways, if you will, on how the body clears things out. So going number two, pooping, the colon, is that pathway of how the digestive tract empties. That's really actually the base of the whole drainage pathway, that everything pretty much relies off of you pooping. So if you're not pooping 1 to 2 times a day, and for those that are struggling with health and looking for health restoration, I would always recommend 2 to 3 times a day, assuming it's not watery stool. But you always want to make sure that pathway is open more than less open. The liver bile duct is an extremely important pathway. The kidneys, clearing out toxins that way. We've got the lymphatic system, the brain draining to the lymph, which is the glymphatic system, skin sweating. So there's multiple of these pathways. And if they're clogged, there's no point to jump to try to detox. There's no point to jump to try to kill things, because those toxins and the debris of the pathogens that you're going after, they have nowhere to clear to. And if they don't have anywhere to clear to, you're going to get inflamed. You're going to have all kinds of symptoms. Your energy level is going to drop because your body, it's bombarded with this debris and inflammation. It's like, I can't clear this out because the pathways aren't open. So the first step is opening up the pathways. Then the next thing, and this was a big shift that I took a few years ago after I wrote the 5 Steps to Restoring Health protocol. It's like, oh God, got to update that. But there's so much going on that it's on my list. But the next step is parasites. Parasites are a modern day epidemic because of the toxicity epidemic. So toxins in our body, there's 85,000 registered with the United States of America. Who knows how many chemicals have actually been synthesized by humans on this earth. I mean, that's a hard number probably to really figure out, but 85,000 chemicals, it accumulates and it creates this environment in our body that then allows these pathogens to thrive. Parasites specifically will absorb heavy metals. So they're sponges. So if you have heavy metal toxicity, your body's like, hey, parasites, why don't you can hang around, because you're going to help minimize this burden of heavy metals. The problem is then that means that you have the parasite with the heavy metal inside. So it's technically still in your body, but now the parasites are now producing toxins and they're causing their own stressor, and you still have the toxin technically within the body. So parasites are a modern day epidemic. The point, and I have to give my friend, Dr. Todd Watts, massive credit. He was the guy that opened my eyes up to parasites. He started showing me pictures on his phone of things that clients were getting out. And I mean, they're like creatures, right? And I was so intrigued. I was like, I was grossed out.
Actually alien, right? Some of the stuff, you start really looking at some of the images, some of the stuff that people actually have been holding in their systems. It's,
oh my gosh. Stuff. Yeah. And I started looking at the pictures and I was grossed out, but so intrigued. I'm like, I want to try this. And so he sent me a bottle of Mimosa pudica seed, and I started taking it, and 17 days later, I'm sitting on the toilet and I go to wipe and it didn't feel normal. And I look down and there's these 2 worms hanging from me into the toilet bowl. They're dead. And they were long, obviously, just to be in me and into the toilet water. I took some toilet paper, pulled them out, and my mind just started racing. I'm like, wait a minute. If I have these, a relatively healthy guy, who else does? And the next month and a half, every stool, there's just piles of worms, like smaller 4 to 7 inch ones. And across the board with all the clients I was working with at the time, I'm like, we have to get down the parasite route. I think this is a big epidemic. This seems to be a big piece to the puzzle. And next thing you know, I would say cleansing parasites effectively was one of the most profound things I've done on a protocol side. And what I realized was that mold spores will live inside of parasites, that toxins will live inside of parasites, that viruses, certain viruses will actually live inside of parasites. And then even certain types of bacteria will live inside of parasites, like Lyme disease, for instance, has been shown to live safely within certain types of parasites like nematodes. So if somebody has a viral infection, if they have a bacterial infection like chronic Lyme disease, if they have heavy metal toxicity, if they have mold toxicity, clearly make sure your environment is safe. So remedy or move, and be very cautious with porous things like furniture and mattresses, that you don't bring those and contaminate your next environment type of thing. But if you can't get up over the hump, chances are it's because you got to take down what I consider almost that mother cell, take down the parasite that then unleashes and unlocks those other areas.
So in terms of sequence, what you're saying is, firstly, you need to make sure your drainage is working. And one of the things to say about that as well is that there's no point in getting into sophisticated, fancy programs if you haven't got the basics that are working there. And then that actually, potentially before one goes after Lyme or co-infections or other things that maybe, or mold or whatever, that your preference is to tackle parasites first.
Yes. Yeah. And you see this human nature across the board. Like, look at relationships, right? If your relationship isn't where you want it to be with your spouse, do you jump into some advanced type of thing, technique to help benefit your relationship? Or you're like, hey, there's not intimacy in my relationship, and you go buy some Kama Sutra books. Like, you got to remember the basics, that what's your spouse's love language? If it's quality time, then doing all these other things isn't really going to work. And it's the same thing in the functional medicine side, that you can have the best protocols out there for detoxification and, you know, clearing mold and killing Lyme disease. But if you don't have your foundation of opening up your drainage pathway and take down the parasitic concrete wall that's a barrier to all this, you're going to be hitting your head against the wall and wonder, like, why me? Like, why can't I figure this out? It's because either you're missing a piece of the puzzle or you're doing it in the wrong order.
Right. Makes sense. And do you have a preference of testing for parasites, and also maybe say a bit about some of the ways that you recommend in terms of treatments?
Yeah. So the testing out there for parasites just stinks. I honestly, right now, I don't recommend people to spend money on a test, because a lot of times it comes back negative and we still want you to cleanse. So I'd rather have somebody put resources, instead of $500 on a stool test, put that toward actually cleansing, put that toward, clearing those parasites out of your body. And within the last 2 years, they looked at 40, 45 different species of parasites that they never looked at before on a DNA sequencing side of it. And in that, they found over 1 million new genes. And this is in the last 2 years. So to think that we know all the, because there's a lot of PCR testing and things out there, that we know exactly, which bugs, how to test for everyone, and that every time we test, it's going to be 100% accurate, at least right now in, 2019, like, no way. So I hope that as things grow and advance, that there's going to be more testing out there. But my friend, Dr. Todd Watts, his test is, hold your two fingers up, find your pulse, and if you can feel your pulse, that's a positive for parasites. If you can't feel your pulse, then you might want to refeel to make sure you're still alive. Because it really comes down to, in all the cases in chronic illness, there's always been at least some type of parasite or parasites in somebody's body. Now, of course, there's going to be different levels where somebody might have to cleanse for a year. Other times it might be, 90 days, and then all of a sudden they're kind of up over that barrier. So it is individualized, though.
And in terms of getting rid of parasites, obviously that can be quite a tough process sometimes, depending upon what kind of parasites are there. What are your preferences in terms of protocols and supplements, and also pieces that perhaps support alongside supplements?
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to be biased, being a co-founder of Microbe Formulas, and my other founder, if you will, is Dr. Todd Watts. I was speaking at a conference, and this guy I didn't know asked me a question at the end. I was talking about hormones and Lyme disease, and I'm like, either this guy's a jerk or he's just really smart and wants to know. And afterward, we had a dialogue and talked. I'm like, oh no, this guy's actually really nice. He's just really smart. He just really wants to, dig down on the pathways and know the answer. And we actually became friends. And that's when he showed me the pictures of the critters that people were getting out. And that's what kind of opened my eyes. And then I tried it. And then I realized, wow. So I told everybody, I'm like, you gotta call this guy's office. We can call him the parasite guy, Dr. Todd Watts, order this stuff called Mimosa Pudica seed. And so for, a few years, I just sent clients to him. Like, he had things hand compound pharmacy because it's really sticky and, no filler. So it was a interesting process that I used to go through. But then one day my brother-in-law is like, why don't you partner with Todd and come out with some more effective stuff? And I'm like, yeah, that's actually a good idea. And Todd was right there. He's like, yeah, that's a good idea. And that's how actually our, if you will, company formed. So just kind of like to, explain intention that.
Yeah.
What's funny is I actually tried to talk Todd out of ever doing a supplement company because I'm like, you don't want to deal with the regulation and, all the hassle, the FDA, all that stuff. Luckily, he didn't listen to me. And then, lo and behold, obviously we have microbe formulas. But Mimosa Pudica seed, game changer. That is the stickiest stuff. It's very fat soluble. So when you take it in capsules, you want to drink lots of water. But that stuff just gels up and it grabs onto things in your gut. I mean, people have literally cleared out what looks like beef jerky, petrified whatever in their digestive tract that's just clogged them up. Really big fan of Ayurvedic herbs. So things, especially over in India, Holarina, Triphala, clove, neem, Vedanga. These herbs work really well for clearing parasites out. We've actually got a new one coming out that's specifically geared for Strongyloides, which seems to be one of the biggest epidemics. And it's also, if anybody has sinus issues, I'm really leaning right now just on the clinical side of, if you've heard of Marcon's, which is like the multi-resistant Staph aureus in your sinuses, I don't know if it's really that or more parasites. It seems Strongyloides is parasite in nature, and we've actually just do some earlier testing now on this newest formulation. It's called Formula 2. It should be out soon, but we've continually kind of reformulated as we tested out behind the scenes for over a year now. But we've actually had a bunch of clients get worms out of their nose when they just put like a drop or two of the tincture in maybe 6 ounces of distilled or filtered water and then do the neti pot, through, like worms come out. So I really believe that there is a bigger epidemic of parasites out there than we would tend toward. And if you look at, there's been research out there. There was a book called Your Brain on Parasites. It's like a black cover. A lot of research about parasites and how it actually changes thought process and personality and emotions, especially in animals and insects and things like that. So of course it would correlate, that would make sense that it could do that to us too. Of course, human testing isn't as easy as that kind of stuff. But I really believe that this is a big epidemic that needs more more attention and also to be addressed.
Totally makes sense. And so then that's the kind of, the eliminating kind of process, be it kind of parasites, be it, and I guess that there's some crossover here as well in terms of Lyme and co-infections and other pieces, right? That perhaps there's different pieces that you might bring into the jigsaw, but you're saying that you would deal with parasites first. Once you've dealt with parasites, that's the stage then you would move to other pathogens, as it were.
Yes. Yeah. Let me just share this image because I feel like it will help the listener. So if you look to the left side, it says detect. That's understanding what's wrong. Then the next step is drainage. And understand with drainage comes along with you for the journey. So as you're cleansing parasites, as you're detoxifying heavy metals, your body's going to be getting more stress from the actual process. So you're going to need a little bit more support than if you weren't doing anything. Well, that support is actually supporting the liver bile duct. It's supporting the kidneys. It's supporting the colon. It's supporting the lymphatic system. And then, like I said, the next step is parasites. Once you start going after the parasite realm, now it kind of unlocks you to really actually clear mold spores, body mold out, It unlocks the heavy metals that are in parasites, where you can actually really start getting deep down and clearing out the built up toxins, and then also the virus bacteria. What's interesting about the virus side of it is when you have a parasitic infection, it causes autoimmunity in the body and actually pushes the immune system on the opposite side, the whole TH1, TH2, it pushes it to the opposite side that then allows viruses to replicate and essentially go out of control. So if somebody's got some type of, you know, Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, HSV1, 2, you know, these different types of viral infections that are in the body, and you continually bombarding and like, why can't I get this down? Why can't I get it under control? It might simply be because there's a chronic parasitic infection that's not allowing the immune system to actually activate to go after the viruses. Besides the fact that these things, these pathogens can be inside of parasites as well. And if it's inside, then it's like you've got this protector that's essentially housing the bacteria and viruses that you got to clear the protector out, which is the parasite, that then allows your immune system to get down deep into these infections. So there's definitely an important order to this. There are some things, not to overcomplicate it, but environmental mold is early on the game. You want to make sure your environment is safe. Electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic radiation is really important, because that will actually raise blood glucose in research. We know that in this digital toxicity, if you will, these digital waves and things will actually make good bugs go bad. They'll cause mold to increase the mycotoxin it produces by 600 times. So essentially, your environment, mold, and EMF is really important. Also, if you have mercury in your mouth, if you have root canals, or especially cavitations are probably even more important, which can come from a root canal, but essentially cavitations are infection in the jaw. If you have those things, those can easily hold you back as well. So I don't want to make it so simple that it's this, but it is this. You know, this is the core, and then just make sure we're not missing some of those other pieces as well.
And how much of a impact do you think when you're, it may also be that the work that you're doing with the parasites, because you're using binders, may already be having some impact on some of those other pieces as well. But I guess that then there are specific protocols that you're recommending once you've dealt with that parasitic kind of layer. So yeah, tell us a little bit about how you would then start to work with those other pieces.
Yeah, so the graphic is linear. When you're going through it, it's not. There's a lot of overlap, if you will.
Yes.
So you start with drainage, and general recommendation is, you know, give yourself 30 days of making sure you can poop, making sure you open up the liver bile duct and support the kidneys at minimum to kind of get it going. You know, do that for 30 days. So energizing the mitochondria is not a bad idea either at that early stage. Then move into parasites. When you start parasitic cleansing, it's good to have something to grab on to the debris. So parasites will die, and they'll, you know, clear out some of the debris that's in them, and others will die and release it in your body. And that's where a lot of symptoms will come in. So parasites like to produce ammonia, which is a very alkaline toxin. It can make you feel like trash or just like a wreck. So having something to bind on to ammonia is really important. Parasites will release heavy metals. So it's important to have some type of binder that can bind on heavy metals so they don't redistribute and, you know, get deposited some other place, that when they do get released from the parasites dying, that you're, you know, soaking those up. So there is a lot of overlap, but it's best to understand it in a linear order to know, okay, this is the order. Now, as you're listening to all these different experts, like for instance, on your fatigue event here, or listening to podcasts or reading books, instead of it like, okay, I'm going to have to completely trash this thing I was doing with all these 30 supplements, now I'm going to switch over to this. We can start taking nuggets like, oh, you know what? Coffee enemas, huh? That helps to open up the liver bile duct. That's in the drainage category. Boom, you've got a tool. Or, oh, it's, you know, cat's claw for Lyme disease. Okay, well, that's in the chronic infection, you know, bacteria virus category. Write that down as a tool. Instead of being so overwhelmed that things don't make sense, if you get the basis of the roadmap, now as you start to learn, you can start throwing things in there and it makes so much more sense and you can be guided a lot better.
Very cool. Very cool. And I think what you're saying about sequencing, it is crucial, because you can do absolutely the right things in the wrong order. And, you know, it's like having having the code for a safe. You can have the right numbers in the wrong order, but it still isn't going to be effective in terms of opening the door. I was curious, one thing we haven't perhaps got into that we've been talking about parasites and digestion is the role of leaky gut. Do you want to say a little bit about how parasites can drive leaky gut and also how leaky gut can then be kind of part of, you mentioned in your book, is the relationship with autoimmune diseases and how there's a kind of a ripple effect often of these kinds of pieces.
Yeah, the gut has gained a lot of attention in the last few years, and rightfully so. I believe it's a really important piece, but the gut itself isn't the source. The leaky gut, or really in the scientific literature, it's called intestinal permeability, right? The things that open up the gut. It's kind of like Swiss cheese and the holes get bigger and certain things sneak through that they shouldn't. And the body gets in this autoimmune and reactive type mode. The thing that causes leaky gut isn't leaky gut itself. It's the things upstream. So chronic infection, Lyme, these viruses, toxins are a big thing. Glyphosate, it rips apart your digestive tract. We've got parasitic infections itself will do that too. And the toxins that parasites produce, being in a moldy environment will do that. Eating horrible food, processed food, kind of the standardized type diet will stress the gut out and cause intestinal permeability or leaky gut. Being emotionally stressed out will do that as well. So when we're looking at, okay, let's fix the gut. In order to fix the gut, you got to deal with all the other things. So what you can do is really focus on how do I support the gut as I go upstream to then eliminate what's upstream. And then now I'm going to stop stressing the gut out downstream. So if you think, if you have a power plant and it's kicking out poison into the river, the goal isn't like, how do I scoop the poison out of the river as fast as possible, which is kind of the gut. The goal is, well, how do you stop the poison from being dumped into the river that then causes the gut to be stressed out or the river to be stressed out? So it's all about getting to the source. And if we work toward the sources, it's just such an easier journey.
Yes. And I guess sometimes when you've dealt with those sources, be it parasites and some kind of Lyme or co-infections, that then there's a stage of kind of rebuilding and supporting the body and repairing the damage, because it's like, for example, case of your wife who a number of decades had her body kind of just about hanging in there with these things that are going on, that you take away those pathogens or those things that are kind of causing the problems. I'm curious as to what you see as being some of the pieces that are helpful and then that kind of that rebuilding on the other side.
You mean for the digestive tract specifically?
Yeah, the digestive tract and also more generally as well, like some of the things that you see as facilitating the kind of the body's own healing process and mechanism.
Yeah, one of the most important things for gut health and just the body's overall health is what's termed, it's bad language because it's phase 3 detox, but it's actually drainage. So when you look at the liver, liver's really the lifeline of detox of the body. It does it's called phase 1 and phase 2 detox, where it essentially will take some chemicals, modify them to actually make them a little bit more toxic, to then get them to phase 2 to then process to kind of neutralize them essentially. And then the body, the liver is now, okay, I got these, chemicals and things that I've processed. What do I do with them? And that's what phase 3 detox is, which is really liver drainage. Like, how does the body get rid of it? And it gets rid of it, primarily by dumping it into the bile. So bile movement and the bile, the viscosity where it's more runny and it can flow is very important. Glyphosate will actually stop bile secretion and production, like just like that. Estrogen, high estrogen levels will actually clog up bile as well. So for those that have hormonal issues, unfortunately, a self-perpetuating cycle, because the liver is so big with hormonal production that when the bile flow is backed up, that's going to kind of jack your hormones up even more, kind of gets into that flow. So opening up the liver bile duct, and then talking about parasites a lot, there's a lot of parasites that love to be in there too, besides all the toxins that can clog it up just from getting dumped into it. Strongyloides, roundworms can climb from your GI into the bile ducts. Liver flukes, Giardia, all these different types of things can be in there. So just understand motion is life, and opening up the liver bile duct is one of the most important things. There's herbs out there like bitters that can help open that up. There are things you can do at home, like I mentioned, coffee enemas, liver gallbladder flushes, castor oil packing, these type of things that can help kind of create more movement. There's other things out there called TUDCA, T-U-D-C-A. It's an acronym for, it's a long name, but it's torso deoxycholic acid. And what you need to know about TUDCA is it protects your liver. So if there's any liver damage and you're taking medications, or this is big in the weightlifting world, like steroids, and it's really stressing your liver out, if you take TUDCA, T-U-D-C-A, it'll actually prevent further damage. So it's one of those products that's very healthy for your liver, but it's amazing because it's a water-soluble bile acid to get the flow moving. So anybody that is reactive, sensitive, food allergies, you know, very up and down, like, oh my gosh, I have multiple chemical sensitivity, exposed to perfume, fragrances, or mold, and just get knocked down and out, the liver bile duct is almost surely plugged and needs to be opened up. And if you open that up, I feel like everything changes for your health and also your GI tract too.
That's fascinating. That's an interesting one. And also, we've got a little bit, just a couple more questions. One that I'm always curious about with people that have had a breadth of experience is, I'm curious as to what you see. We mentioned some of the mindset stuff earlier, but I'm curious as to what you see as being the difference between people that have fatigue-related conditions and some of the complexities in the pieces you're talking about, those that are effective in their recovery process and those that aren't. What are there any kind of things that you've identified which are, you know, to either look at it from the point of view, things that are getting in the way, like are kind of stopping that healing process, or indeed either attitudes or strategies or ways of approaching which seem to be increasing the likelihood of success of someone's healing path?
Yeah. The to you or for you that we talked about earlier, I believe, is really important. Man, I mean, it's such a loaded question in the, you know, emotional side. I really believe though, if your attitude is in imperfect action, that a lot changes. A lot of times we want to wait until, like, I figured exactly everything out and I've researched everything about this topic and now I'm going to do it. But if you just started acting, learn something, where does it fit into the order and the protocol like I was discussing, and just start moving on it, you're going to learn a lot faster that way than if you just try to, you know, take interviews in and books in without actually trying to implement it. So implementation, imperfect action and massive implementation is going to get you the best results, because you're going to look back in 1 or 2 years and realize, wow, I can't believe how far I've come. And it's simply because you've just taken little steps. It's not, you're not trying to, you know, create a whole foundation and a whole house at once. You're not trying to knock down a huge wall all at once. Like, you're just kind of chipping away at it, but it's chipping away constantly that makes massive changes. So with my wife is now healthier than she's ever been. And it's been quite a journey, but that journey has been so positive because we see just, I mean, the thousands of, I don't even know the number of people we've affected, you know, like, just with all the things that I've done out in the public, let alone the actual clients that we've worked with, let alone the people that are like in our inner circle, kind of at home community, and that are, you know, doing these protocols. It's such a profound impact, and it only happened because we just took massive action and we didn't have it all dialed in right away, but we figured it out. And that allowed us to, you know, be at the point that we're at now, where my wife is healthy. And I think that's the mindset to be at, is imperfect action. Yes. Like, yeah, you might not have it all figured out, but just act, just move.
Yeah. It kind of takes a certain courage and determination, I guess, coupled with a certain amount of patience and willingness to kind of stay at things and to get setbacks along the way and use those as a source of positive information. Before we come to how people can find out more about you and your work, is there anything that you feel that we've missed or you want to add to what we've said so far?
Just keep moving forward. You know, there is a reason where you're at, and if you get into that place of why me, why is this happening? Look at it from what have you learned thus far from your health being in the state it's at? What have you gleaned from it? And if your health had not gotten to that part, would you have ever actually learned those things or that thing, depending on what it is? And when you get to the point where you're like, wow, no, I now understand so much about diet. I now understand so much about, you know, name the category, that all happened because there was this quote unquote crisis or this challenge. And life is continually just stepping up to the challenges. They're not problems, they're challenges. And that's how we grow. We never grow on top of the mountain, we grow in the valleys. And it's the valleys where the challenges are, and that's how you're going to move forward. So I just would encourage you to move forward, keep learning, implementing, and just listen to your heart. If you listen to somebody or read something, you're like, whoa, that really grabs me, or wow, resonates with me, go down that path. But don't feel bad as you get down that path a little bit and feel like, oh, maybe this isn't the right, and start going another path or keep learning things. You're only ready for what you've been exposed to and where you're at. So it's just continuing, like, taking a step forward. You don't see the whole staircase. You just take the first step. And we don't know where exactly that staircase is going, but just keep step after step after step. And when you look back, you're going to realize, wow, I've taken a lot of steps and I've really moved forward.
Nice. That's a great analogy. For people that want to find out more about you and your work, where's the best places to do that?
Best spot is my main website. It's drjdavidson.com. So Dr. is Dr., J is J-A-Y, and then Davidson. So drjdavidson.com. Pretty much everything's linked there. It's probably the easiest place.
Fantastic. And there's obviously, you're a bit of a summit master. So there's an ongoing kind of summits and ways of people to dive in that I guess they'll find linked then through your main site.
Yes. Yep. Our supplement company's on there, the at-home program, our one-on-one coaching, the summits. Yeah, we try to put them all there just to make it easy.
Awesome. Jay, thank you so much. That's been fascinating. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you,
Alex.